From KUAR News in Little Rock, I'm Jacob Kaufman. Arkansas's candidate filing period for the 2018 elections is officially over as of Friday. We heard last week from Arkansas Public Media that UA's Janine Perry doesn't foresee much of a blue wave in Arkansas, despite trends maybe elsewhere in the nation. Today, we'll hear from Arkansan Billy Fleming, co-author of The Indivisible Guide. He's worked in President Obama's White House and now at the University of Pennsylvania School of Design. Billy Fleming, thanks a lot for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I guess, is Janine Perry right, or what does a victorious election cycle look like to the indivisible movement in Arkansas?
Yeah, well, I think there are a couple things I would say about that. One is that if we're defining a blue wave as like the complete Democratic takeover of state government in a single cycle, then we're probably misidentifying what a blue wave really looks like in a deep red place like Arkansas, where, you know, a generation of disinvestment and electoral losses have left the Democrats in probably their weakest position since the Civil War. And so for them, this was a multi-cycle thing in which they saw their power erode and draw them down to 24 seats in the House, a handful in the Senate, and no statewide or congressional seats. And it's going to take them a long time to build that back. You know, I think if you look at what wave elections in Arkansas have typically been defined as in the last, say, 15 or 20 years, it comes down to around like a 12 to 15 seat pickup in the state House, which is about what we see as the maximum reach for Democrats in Arkansas this year. Mm-hmm. And so to me, if they were to get in that range in that 12 to 15 seat pickup and pump their minority up to a high 30s, low 40s, that to me constitutes a wave. That would be something like I've never seen in my adult lifetime in Arkansas, in which the Democratic Party has only been hemorrhaging, if not outright, rapidly bleeding power in the state.
Right. I guess even the smallest of pickups, for instance, if Democrats, I think you wrote in the Arkansas Times last week, they pick up two seats for each chamber, they could get rid of Republican supermajorities, which they could form a voting block for budget processes.
Exactly. And we shouldn't discount, you know, the incredible power that would come from forcing Republicans to actually negotiate with them on, you know, everything ranging from the budget this session, which, they can't even get their own caucus, the Republicans can't even get their own caucus to agree to. What that ought to look like. Bringing Democrats to the table would just make it all that much easier for us to build power and do good things for a state that desperately needs it.
You mentioned some of this earlier, but this year's field is much wider than 2016. Some races haven't been opposed for even longer than that. Can you describe maybe the makeup of the candidates that filed as Democrats as you see it, and what role Indivisible has compared to the official Democratic Party of Arkansas when recruiting people?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I have nothing to do with candidate recruitment in Arkansas. That's the work of county committees and folks like Will Watson and Michael John Gray and the DPA chair and all those other folks. But for me, when I've heard from folks who've either, you know, filed for election this year or have expressed an interest in it and might be on the ballot in 2020, they all talk about the energy and the excitement and, frankly, the newfound power that groups like Indivisible have brought to a state where the Democratic Party has existed on paper, but maybe not in reality for quite some time. And I think for most folks who run this year on the Democratic ticket, they understand that if they're going to, I think, pull off a couple of surprises, which they're going to need to do to make this, you know, from a trickle into a wave, they're going to have to lean on those groups who've done the work organizing and building power for the last year and a half. And that's, you know, in Arkansas, mostly coming from outside groups. It's not coming from the party. It's Indivisible. It's Moms Demand. It's Our Revolution. It's all of those groups that I think agree with the Democratic Party on 70, 80, 90% of the issues. But because of the way they're structured, because of the way they're led, because of the way they're funded, operate in completely different ways that are more accessible and more exciting to most folks.
So the Democratic Party in 2016 fielded 49 out of 100 House districts, this time around 57 out of 100. Still, you note in your article, the Arkansas Times, that it doesn't compare necessarily favorable with some other states, but particular areas of the state like Northwest Arkansas, it's a little bit of a different picture.
Yeah, I mean, I think Northwest Arkansas either has a completely full slate for the state ledge or they're very, very close. And they're the only congressional district where you can say that. The second district, I think, filled out a fairly sizable proportion of their seats. And then the first and the fourth really struggled to find folks. I think, as in, I tend to think that candidate recruitment often has less to do with what some folks in the party would tell you, which is that they had trouble finding good, talented people. Where, you know, their hypothesis might be that those people don't exist. I know they do. They're out there. They're waiting for someone to come to them and let them know that their, you know, inkling of an idea to run for office isn't crazy and that they can do it and that they can raise whatever money they need to raise to do it with the party's help or without it. I wish that, things were different in Arkansas this cycle around to make the ballot more accessible to anyone who'd ever thought about running, because that's how you maximize, you know, the potential of a wave election year like this one. And Arkansas didn't quite get there, but lots of other states figured it out. I think I wrote in that article, you know, the Ohio Democratic Party is fielding a literal full slate. They have 99 candidates for 99 seats on their state, in their state house this year. Virginia, which, you know, came within a literal coin flip of flipping their House of Delegates race this year or last year, you know, they fielded 88 out of 100 candidates. Arkansas is fielding 57, and that's great. That's better than we've seen, you know, in recent memory, but it is nowhere near enough to maximize the impact of this wave.
I'm going to ask you to do the earliest postmortem ever conducted. Obviously, we don't know the real results of these candidates until November, but if you had to look at the filing period that closed, how many candidates there are, how many you thought maybe the party could get, do you have any advice going forward? The filing fee is one thing that is different in Arkansas than many states as well.
Yeah, I mean, look, I know they're going to revisit it after this cycle. I know that the state party and the exec committee that governs it know it's a problem. I don't think anybody would agree that $3,000 is a fair amount of money to charge candidates in any state to run for the state legislature, and especially not in the nation's second poorest state. How they decide to do that and what they set it at is kind of their business. But if it were me and it was just my decision to make and it wasn't a deliberative process with lots of other people, I, you know, for 2020, I'd tell folks, if this is your first time to ever run for office, there is no filing fee. If it's your first time to ever run for the state legislature, it's a nominal fee, like 50 or 100 bucks. And if you're an incumbent and you have all the power that comes with incumbency, like an ability to raise money, then you can set the fee a little bit higher to offset some of those losses. State parties don't have to rely on filing fees to keep their lights on and keep their work going. And we know that because every other state party in the country, with the exception of Arkansas's, Democratic and Republican parties, have figured out a way to do this. We can figure it out too. I don't think Arkansas is uniquely disadvantaged to the point where they can't figure out how to exist as parties without exorbitant filing fees, but it's too late to do anything about that this cycle, obviously.
All right, this is my last question. In particular interest to our listeners, perhaps, is the 2nd Congressional District, encompassing Little Rock and many of the counties around it. That's one that traditionally people think the Democrats have a better shot at retaking. French Hill has been in office. I think he's seeking his third term under this. Democrats in the last two elections have been in the high 30%, or last election was around 36%. I think they're in the 40s the time before that. But it's been written by a popular columnist recently that the 2nd District is Arkansas's ex-girlfriend that they just can't get over. Is it any different for Democrats here this time?
Well, it could be. I mean, we're going to write about this in a couple weeks. We wanted to wait for filing to close before we said anything about congressional districts, but we've done the kind of analysis at that level that we've already put out there for state leg districts. Mm-hmm. And in our findings, the 2nd District is as competitive as I think people expect it to be. It's not an easy win for Democrats. That's a +7R district. So we could expect the average Republican to outperform the average Democrat by about 7 points there. That's slightly easier to win than, say, John Ossoff's race in Georgia, which we lost, you know, with $29 million poured into the race. So I don't think people should have any illusions about how hard that race is to win. Doesn't mean it's not winnable. It absolutely is, especially in a year like this one. But the thing that was the most surprising in our analysis, and that we'll have out in a couple of weeks for folks to look through, is that the 3rd District came out as slightly more competitive than the 2nd. And, you know, we don't account for things like candidate quality in our model yet. We're going to do that later on in the year once we get a better idea of how prolific some of these folks are in fundraising and organizing and all the other things that go into assessing candidate quality. But I think the 2nd District is there. I don't think it's as winnable as people think it is, but we can get it if we make a few right moves and we get a little lucky. I think the 3rd District is going to be there for us much sooner than people think. And I think long term, that's where you're going to see the balance of power in the state party shift, because that's where the votes are going to be.
Just some bookkeeping there. 2nd District, Republican French Hill is the incumbent. Clark Tucker, Paul Spencer, Gwendolyn Combs are running the Democratic primary. 3rd District's up in Northwest Arkansas. Steve Womack's the 4th term incumbent. And Joshua Mahoney is running as the Democrat. I've been speaking with Bill Fleming, co-author of The Invisible Guide. Thanks a lot for sharing all your analysis with us.
Thanks for having me.
From KUAR News in Little Rock, I'm Jacob Kaufman.